Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Well, it's been another week, a crazy week, a wild week. I have come to the conclusion that whenever we're dealing with current events, both on the national and international scale, it's nothing but exciting. Things always happen that are unexpected and blows your mind, some of this here stuff. And I want to talk about these things tonight. I have some very, very interesting things to discuss with you, items you're concerned with, I'm sure. Some you may be aware of, some you may not be aware of. If you wish to call in, you can call in and talk with me. The guest call-in number is 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. The number is on the screen in front of you. I'm going to start tonight's show with Attorney General Holder. As you are aware, he has announced his resignation. He's going to leave after 6 years in the job as the Attorney General of the United States. And you know what I have to say about his resignation? Good. It should have happened sooner. He has been one of the poorest Attorney Generals, in my opinion, in the history of this country. I would describe him, and this is terrible, as a lousy Attorney General. And here's why. But let me put this on the side first. As an Attorney General in the field of civil rights, he was outstanding. Whether it was because of his background as an African American, his personal understanding concerned for the African American people, I don't know. But with regard to civil rights, he was in front, he was out there, he knew what he had to do, and he did it. But when it came to everything else, he didn't do it. And here specifically is the weakest point in his time in office. The banks. He never prosecuted the banks. The banks took us down in 2008 with their mortgage schemes that did not work. The banks were on the verge of collapse. They were going to go under. They were going to have to go bankrupt. They were going to be out of business. He assisted. He supported the president. And Obama's wrong in this regard also. I think Obama has not done the job with regard to the banks that he should have done. He and Holder have danced in unison for 6 years on this issue. They said the banks were too big to fail. Specifically, Holder said that. We had to bail the banks out. We had to save them. They were too big to fail. And later on, when there was this cry in the country, send them to jail, arrest these people who did this, because we bailed them out, we saved their asses, and now they're making nothing but money, but they've helped to create the 1%, 99% situation in this country, and we wanted them arrested, jailed, prosecuted. And what did Holder say? The leading legal man in the country, the Attorney General of the United States, he said the banks are too big to prosecute. First it was too big to fail, then it was too big to prosecute. And I'll tell you where I think this comes from. Holder was a very successful attorney and is going to go back into private practice as a very successful attorney. He was with the Washington law firm of Covington & Burling. You have to understand, Covington & Burling is and has been the number one law firm in Washington. You got a government problem, you have a Washington problem, you go to Covington and Burling. I have to assume that Holder, while he was with as a partner in Covington and Burling, represented some banks, represented major corporations. And just as he knew what to do with civil rights, he knew what to do with the banks, because he had become one of them, okay? And so the banks were too big to fail and too big to prosecute. I think he did the wrong thing. I think he's going to benefit from this, and he didn't do what he did because he's going to benefit from it when he goes back to private practice. I believe he did what he did with the banks because he honestly believes you can't make the banks go under, even if they should go to jail. You just can't do it because they're too big. I don't think he did it out of any ill will or wrong thought. He was just, that's the way he thinks. And that's not the way I think. And I'm glad he's going, because I believe he has done much harm to our country. Which now brings me to Iceland. Follow what I'm going to say here. Iceland had the same problem we did, 2007, 2008. the banks killed the people of Iceland. The three major banks in Iceland went berserk. They had the mortgage problem. They were charging high interest rates. Oh, my God, they were doing everything wrong. And they folded. The three major banks, because Iceland isn't that big, the three major banks in Iceland went under. And the issue came up. The government said, we must bail them out. We cannot let our banks fail. And you recall what happened. I did a TV show on this. I've done this radio show on this issue a couple of years ago. I've written on it in my blog. What happened? The people of Iceland said, no way. We are not going to bail the banks out. And in the end, Iceland indicted the bankers. They arrested them. They indicted them. They tried them. And they threw them in jail. I don't know how many Iceland bankers are now sitting in jail. Well, everyone else did it the other way. The United States, Ireland, Spain, the other European Union countries, they bailed out the banks. But Iceland, again, stood alone and said, no way. Let them go under. Let them go bankrupt. Well, the reason Iceland comes back into the picture this week is that it was now announced that Iceland's biggest bank, Kaupthing, K-A-U-P-T-H-I-N-G, Kaupthing, had four officials who were already in jail because they were indicted, or arrested, indicted, tried, prosecuted, and found guilty and put in jail. Well, more thievery was found. More fraud was found. And these four cats, the four top officials sitting in jail already, were indicted again. The people in Iceland don't care. They're making the bankers pay. And guess what? They were found guilty, and they have been sentenced, these three officials, to an additional 3 to 5.5 years each. Nothing wrong with going after the bankers. Now, here's what's interesting. In the meantime, because you got to remember what Holder told us, the banks were too big to pursue, they were too big to fail, they were too big to prosecute, there'd be massive unemployment was the inference, and it was stated in this country. Iceland has not had massive unemployment. And though their unemployment was terrible when the banks went under in 2008, do you know what their unemployment is today? Their unemployment is 4.4%. A hell of a lot better what it's ours. Now, six, they're down to 4.4%. Okay, would you believe it? Where some of the European countries like Ireland are still at 11.5%. Obama's brought us down. But Iceland came down even better and didn't spend all that money bailing out the banks. They thought of the people and not the banks, and they put the bankers in jail. Holder was wrong when he said the banks were too big to fail and too big to prosecute, and history will never forget him for this. Which now brings me to another bank. I love talking about these banks because I'm going to say it again, as I have been saying it for several years, they are first-class whores. That's the only way to describe the banks. They have been whores. Think of the 1% and 99%. We're going to talk now about J.P. Morgan Chase. I'm going to refer to them as Chase because they are referred to as Chase. They were one of the biggies we had to bail out. They were one of the biggies that were involved in this mortgage screw-up that hurt the economy of this country drastically, almost put us under completely. And they are one of the major banks that today are making tons of money because we bailed them out and are not spreading that money around in loans to help people on Main Street. They only care about Wall Street. They're taking care of each other. Screw the 99% is their position. What's happening now? Well, you know, they're whores. And when I describe this story, you can't help but agree with me that they're whores. I'm not being hard on them. Chase recently closed down the accounts. You know, people, we need banks. We need checking accounts, savings accounts. We primarily need checking accounts and credit card accounts so we can do business. They closed down the accounts of hundreds of adult porn stars. You heard me, adult porn stars. They called it de-risking. It's a new word, my friends, de-risking. And what they wanted to do, they said, we have to get rid of politically incorrect customers. We cannot and should not do business for politically incorrect customers, and adult porn stars are politically incorrect people, okay? Well, what happens again with DeRisk, it ends the relationship between the bank and the customer. Just like that, the bank says, you're all done. Here's a check for what you had in the bank. We're no longer doing business with you. Go wherever you have to go. It's your business if you can find another bank. And the banks claim they do this, one, to avoid public embarrassment, and two, because if we're doing business for bad people and they consider adult porn stars bad people, the government's going to get mad at us. And they're going to go on a witch hunt to see if we're doing something wrong because we're doing business with adult porn stars. And this is the theory behind this whole thing. Now, let's bring it together. Let's call a spade a spade. I talked about this on a show, a whole TV show. I've done a whole Black Talk radio show on this. What about the drug lords? I just talked about this 3 months ago. The major banks in this country are doing business with the Mexican and Latin American drug cartels. They're helping to launder drug money, not in the hundreds of thousands, not in the millions, but in the billions of dollars. And what about the terrorists in the Middle East and in Africa? They're also dealing in bank accounts for these people, for the terrorists. So we got the bad guys, the drug lords, we got the bad guys, the terrorists, and these same banks, these big banks, they're not saying, well, they're not politically incorrect. It's okay for us to do business with drug dealers and terrorists, because now this, they talk through the other side of their mouth. We really don't know what our customers do. It's not our business to know. They talk out of both sides of their mouths, these people. Now, the United States government, we have a law that says a bank must know their customers, and they rely on that, the bank knowing their customers to do what they are doing. Why don't they go after the drug dealers? Why don't they go after the terrorists and throw them out? Because they're making too much money. It's billions of dollars, and they're not going to give that up. Now, in addition to porn stars, they also are de-risking by getting rid of any accounts with Muslim students, gun sellers, dating services, check cashing services. And they're taking this position, and this is what the banks are saying. They say the government will be worried that we are facilitating, nice word, facilitating, payment processing for merchant customers engaged in high-risk activities, which pose risk to our financial institutions. What bullshit. All right? You tell me what an adult porn star is going to do to our economy and to the bank's reputation as opposed to a Mexican drug lord, a Latin American drug lord, a terrorist. They're not the same. These guys are trying to cover their asses. They're saying to the world, look, we're doing the right thing. We are doing the right thing. We got rid of the porn stars. We got rid of the check cashing services. We got rid of the gun sellers. And they don't talk about the drug lords or the terrorists. And I got to skip into a sexual thing right now. And it isn't sexual, but I think you're going to understand what I am about to say. When a porn star screws somebody, it's consensual. Consensual sex. When a porn star screws somebody, it's consensual sex. But when a bank shuts down a porn star's account, it's not consensual. It's one-sided. Okay, are we having fun tonight? I am. I hope you are. And I hope I'm making you aware. By the way, my weekly column in Conk Life, which publishes Wednesday, is going to be on de-risking. I'm going to go into it in detail. Okay, we're going to talk now about that guy, the man who jumped over the fence at the White House, and my God, what's happened here? Our Secret Service, the best guys in the world, protect our president. That's their job, protect our president, and have they placed him in jeopardy? First of all, we were told this fellow jumps the fence. I've seen the White House, so have you. I've been on the grounds, outside the grounds. And he jumped over the fence, and he ran 300 feet. And nobody took a shot at him. though. They saw him, the Secret Service men. And they had dogs. They had watchdogs. And no one let a watchdog go. And we were told he made it to the front door. Then a day or two later, we were told he made it inside the front door. Now, yesterday, we're told he got into the East Room. That's inside the White House, and it's inside a good distance into the White House. He got into the East Room before he was taken down. Something's wrong here. They're not doing a very good job. If you or I failed in our jobs, we would be fired for less than the conduct of the Secret Service here. They do need a shakeup. They screwed around with the prostitutes in South America. Do you remember? When you have a job of such responsibility, you must perform it with responsibility. You can't take advantage. You can't do what most other people might do. You have to be above it all. So now this guy, he was carrying a knife. Well, that didn't sound too bad. Thank God he didn't have a gun. Would he have killed the president? Suppose the president or his wife were walking. This is the White House that they walk around in, the East Room area. Suppose he had killed our president or the vice or the president's wife or, God forbid, the president's children. It could have happened. Well, none of us felt it was bad because there was a gun. The guy had the knife, rather. Now we find out he had 800 rounds of ammunition in his car. But this information did not all come out at once. It's eked out to us, okay? And what bothers me is they waited a week, or more than a week, to tell us that this guy made it into the East Room. They also told us a day or two ago, this is not the first time someone has attacked the White House in recent years. In 2011... four shots were fired that ended up in the wall, outside wall, and the window jamb of the White House. No one ever told us. What has happened to transparency in government? I keep coming back to us. What's happened with the media? If the media knew, they had an obligation to share it with us. And I can't believe the media didn't know any of this that was going on from the East Room to those shots in 2011. I just think we're given what the media wants us to know and what the government wants us to know. So, I don't know what's going to happen. They're having the hearings. Congressmen, it's amazing. Republicans and Democrats cannot agree on anything. It's totally bipartisan, the hearing that was held today. They're both after the Secret Service's ass, and properly so. We don't want to lose our president. And boy, they better shake him up real good. I don't know what it takes, but they have to do something. People have to perform the task for which they have been hired. No excuses, especially at that level. Okay, I want to talk about police. I want to talk about militarization again. I've been talking about this for 2 years, television, radio, writing about it. I thought it was a voice in the wilderness, and now everybody talks about militarization. I want to go to the Ferguson Police Department first, okay? How do I put this? I wrote an article that's in this week's Conk Life about the Al-Qaeda gang that could not shoot straight, this new Al-Qaeda group in the subcontinent of India who wanted to bring down a United States carrier. They were going to capture it in Karachi, which is part of Pakistan. And when they went to the Karachi harbor to take over the United States carrier, they made a mistake, and instead they went on board a Pakistani frigate. How they made the mistake, I don't know. I described them as a gang that couldn't shoot straight. Well, the Ferguson Police Department, it's wrong for me to say they can't shoot straight because they did shoot straight when they shot and killed Michael Brown. But it's the same thing. They screw up, okay? And let me talk about recent screw-ups that bother me with regard to the Ferguson Police Department and makes me wonder what the hell is going on with police departments in this country. First of all, the police chief. His name is Tom Jackson. This past week, we all saw it on videotape. The whole world saw it. He went out to the people protesting, and he apologized on camera. He says, I apologize to you. I apologize to the family. I apologize for the death of Michael Brown. I apologize for leaving Wilson, rather. I'm sorry. Michael Brown, for leaving Brown's body in the street for 4 hours. And he said, I'm going to march with you people tonight to show you how I feel. They didn't want him, and I don't blame them. He's lucky he didn't get his ass kicked. He wanted to march with the protesters. Here's the police chief that is supposed to be enforcing the law, and he now wants to march with the people who are opposed to the law right now. Doesn't that make sense? But that isn't why I'm talking about this. Why did the chief go out and join the protesters and make these statements that he was sorry? Well, they hired a public relations man. The Ferguson Police Department hired a public relations man. His name, Devin James. Devin James is the one who told the chief, you're going to go out, you're going to join the protesters, you're going to apologize for the death, apologize for leaving them in the street, him in the street, and walk with the group. And you know what? It came out the next day after this, the chief was out there protesting, that Devin James, the PR man hired, okay, had been convicted of reckless homicide in 2006 in Delby County, Tennessee. Reckless homicide, and he served 90 days. Ain't the kind of guy you want leading your public relations effort in this situation. Of course, the police department fired him right away. The other thing I can't understand is the policemen themselves. They are walking around wearing bracelets saying, and I quote, I am Darren Wilson. Darren Wilson is a police officer who shot Michael Brown. You don't do that. Your job is to enforce the law. They're taking a position. I can understand they want to support their buddy in blue, but this is not a situation where they have to take that kind of an outward position. The chips are going to fall soon in this thing, from a local prosecution perhaps to a federal prosecution. You don't go out and add fuel to the fire by letting the people of your community see you wearing bracelets saying, I am Darren Wilson. Now, it goes a step further, which bothered me in this whole thing. Saturday night, a police officer got shot by someone in the crowd. Had to happen. When you have protests, you have demonstrations, you get violence. There was a black man standing outside a closed community center. Police officer went over to him, started talking to him, told him to take off or something. And before you knew it, the policeman's chasing the black man. The black man turns around, he takes a shot at the cop, and the cop gets shot in the arm. The black man was never caught. A body camera has this whole thing on film and shows the police officer instigating this confrontation, which now brings us to Sunday, this last Sunday. The protests are continuing. Sometimes bigger, sometimes smaller, sometimes with more furor. Sunday night, people were in front of the police station and rocks and bottles started to be thrown. The police officers ended up arresting 12 people. Ferguson is a tinderbox. It's ready to explode. Whether it will, I don't know. I think all of this could have been avoided and still can be avoided if the local prosecutor will do his job and present the case to a grand jury and let them decide, and if the federal government comes down with whatever indictments they're going to have. Everybody's waiting, even the federal government. I know they're investigating civil rights violation, a little bit different from shooting this guy, but let's do something. It's over a month. If it was you and me, you know that we're drunk driving or we did something else wrong, we'd still be sitting in jail. We would have been indicted by now. We would have had a trial scheduled. Why can't we do that in this case? Why can't the normal routine take place? And now we're going to go to Pittsburgh. It's policemen again. This goes back to June 24th, 2012, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, June 24th, 2012, the emergency room of Mercy Hospital in Pittsburgh. 23-year-old Malik Grissom is in the emergency room laying on a stretcher dead. His stepfather is the Reverend Earl Baldwin Jr. The Reverend is there, he's leaning over his stepson's body, and he's crying. And he's talking to his dead stepson. For for whatever reason, I don't know why, the police didn't want this man sorrowing over his stepson, and they started pulling him away. And, of course, he didn't want to be pulled away. He's holding on to his stepson's body, and the police are yanking him away. By the way, wonderful, these cell phones. This is all on video again via a cell phone. Isn't it amazing? And while several police officers are grabbing this black minister and pulling him away, they're not screwing around, they're really pulling him away, one of the officers takes a taser gun. It's all there on the video. And he puts it over the minister's head, and he bops him in the head. He shoots him in the head with the taser gun, okay? Now, a federal lawsuit was brought this week against the police department. The police department said they did nothing wrong, and they say the boy was not dead, and that the stepfather was interfering with the hospital trying to provide emergency treatment to the son. The family and their attorney say, and I did not see the whole video, that if you watch the whole video, it's clear that the hospital emergency room was doing nothing. They had abandoned all hope of reviving him. The boy appeared to be dead. Nobody was screwing around with him, except for his stepfather, who was crying over him. And he wasn't being treated any further. So it was wrong for the police officers to do this. But yet they don't own, nobody owns up to what they did wrong. We could solve a lot of problems in this country if we didn't say no, if our municipalities and our police departments, instead of saying, no, we did no wrong, when they did say, yes, I did, let's get this problem resolved, I promised to do good and not do it again. But they hesitate to admit to error. They are afraid to, which now brings me to a situation where the right thing was done with regard to a police department. I'm taking you back to California, to a case you're going to remember, to a situation you are going to clearly recall. On July 1st, that's all, folks, last July 1st, a woman in California, if you recall, was walking on a freeway between the lanes of traffic. A California Highway Patrol officer, he attacked her. He ran out in the center mall, threw her on the ground, started pounding her viciously in the head with his fist. And how do we know this is true? Because somebody driving by in a car stopped, took their cell phone out, and videoed the whole scene. That's why I say these cell phones are terrific. And this woman was hurt, apparently, badly. And there is a saying that justice delayed is justice denied. It happens in most of these cases, and it's true. I was a lawyer for 46 years. I know how this happens. In this situation, though, this case in California did not take forever. That cell phone video really showed it up clearly. The woman's name who got beat up was Marlene Pinnock, 51 years old, an African-American. Her case was settled this past week, 2.5 months after the situation occurred. Her case was settled, listen to this, for $1.5 million. The police officer resigned. There is a criminal investigation ongoing. The judge involved said that the money for this woman, Marlene Pinnock, was put in a special needs trust. Recognize those words, special needs trust, set up to provide a mechanism for her long-term care. Now, I'm not sure what that means. Either she was screwy mentally when this happened, or as a result of the beating, she's mentally screwed up or physically disabled, and she needs money to care for her. This case in California should start a trend. We should be doing it all over the country. The police departments, the municipalities should start showing the people we're going to do the right thing and not hardline these situations. Okay, that is the show for this week. I hope you have enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing it. Hopefully all of you enjoyed listening. Even if you don't enjoy it, a lot of you are listening, so there must be something to it. As you are aware, and I'm aware, most of you listen to this show, not tonight, but you listen to it in its archived version, and you also pick it up on Facebook and Twitter during the course of the next week. I appreciate it very much. I want to tell you again, as I tell you every week, I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. If you enjoy this show, you will enjoy my book. If you do not enjoy the show, do not buy my book. You will not enjoy it. The book is available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Thank you for joining me again this week. I look forward to being with you next week.